our sort of overall all mission is to provide informational tools for the purpose of helping us to understand the molecular basis of disease, also to improve the quality of patient care, and to be able to use these tools for teaching purposes. The tools are to be used by physicians, research investigators, students, and more recently, educated laypersons. Well, for some reason, this doesn't like my screen resolution, so everything is going to come out too small. So we have, let's go back here for a second. And we have our system is a combined local system and portal system. We have what runs locally, we have the internet, and we also link to several internet links as well. This is an on-site personal consultant. It runs fast enough to use with the students or patients in front of you or our colleagues so that you can communicate with the individual. It functions as a peripheral brain, as it were. It's got this little... it's not a substitute for understanding principles of science and medicine, nor does it discourage critical thinking. It's really an intent to allow you to retrieve information through an intuitive interface in a real-time basis with the patient in front of you, and I'll get to that. It's really a combined intermix of graphics, images, and text. And what I usually use, and this doesn't show well here, is shown here are the pathologic hallmarks in Alzheimer's disease, including the neurofibrillary tangles, the senile plaques, and also granular vacuolar chain. So we use images, and we do this in the CLOS environment. We use the variation of the open window stream to be able to bring up windows of arbitrary size anywhere on the screen that allow for a combination of images, texts, and graphics that we draw. Our images, we then can point out specific features of the images. For here, for example, you can see the senile plaques that form one of the pathologic hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. And we sort of wrap this around something that allows us to link this to an underlying object that represents the senile plaques. And you can then, just simply a point and click system. And a description of amyloid here. And then one of the choices is the amyloid. Couple things to know here is the text in here highlights, and that's because the one thing that we do is we go through and read through the English text, picks out words that the system recognizes, so that in any English comment, if it recognizes a word, it will identify that word and mark that word for highlighting. It actually, and I'll show you this, it will present to you a list of the developer, a list of items to see whether or not you want to highlight those items. And they can be terms up to three terms long, they can be separated by hyphens across line breaks, etc. And you can see, and all you have to do is point and click on it. And for example, here we can look at the amyloid precursor protein from which this peptide is derived. And shown here, is a cartoon that peptides. And what you see here is a cartoon of a protein. And our proteins are represented as ordered sets of motifs. So motifs are structural elements that give rise to the function of the molecule. And each of these themselves is an object. So our proteins essentially are large objects that are composed of, that contain themselves slot values, a list of objects themselves. For example, our slot motif is a list of motif objects. And so an ordered set of objects can be a slot value. It is, in fact, for our slot motif for proteins. That's how we represent proteins. You can see them here. You can actually have two layers that display in cartoons. You can have a domain, and you can have motifs within the domain. You can actually have structures that of arbitrary complexity that you can use to represent things. And this is particularly good for this. And you can analyze these structures simply by iterating through do loops, which the do things to pick apart pieces of the protein. Another thing that we do is that we link to the internet, or we store in large databases on our disk. So we have uses for persistent objects that, for example, this database that holds this particular object is 120 megabytes on disk. We use Wood in MCL. The system also runs on LispWorks, but LispWorks doesn't have a corresponding database, and none of this is stored on our LibTorch version. Most of our, in addition to development, we also deliver to customers. We give these out to students and researchers. About half of our users are clinicians, and about half of them are scientists. And although I develop on Macintosh, because I like Macintosh top and less for development, 80 to 90% of our users are in Windows. So I develop on Macintosh and deliver on Windows. The non-portable issues here are major in terms of time consuming. Yes?
How many users do you have?
We have almost 100 now.
Wow.
And we're going up. I don't have any trouble selling this to medical students if I get the opportunity to show them, because it provides them what, you know, the level of expertise of, you know, faculty level position when they're you know, beginning medical students. And this provides a huge amount of power to physicians that have it within it. And I'd like to show you some examples of that here. And it also draws, so if we can get to the cartoon, this shows a cartoon of the amyloid precursor protein. The region of the protein that gives rise to the peptide that winds up deposited in this particular disease. It's created by the sequential action of two segmentations of hydrolysis, beta segmentation and gamma segmentation. And it cleaves right within the membrane region that you can see here in the box region. And then you can see it draws cartoons of molecular complexes. It figures out how many to draw these. It figures out how many subunits there are, how big each subunits are. If there's membrane region, it aligns the membranes. If there's intermolecular bonds, it will align those to create those, etc. It turns out that the active form is presenilin 1 here. And this is the object of presenilin 1 drawn in context of this molecular complex. And this is that drawn in context itself. And you can see the active aspartates here in the membrane region. Glycosylation sites for binding beta-glucuronic. And these structures are all drawn from symbolic representations. They're not stored as such. We have a considerable amount of work into drawing. So all you have to do is enter the symbolic representations. And you can actually read the feature tables. And for example, the Swiss protein database entries shown here, which gives feature tables. It can actually read the feature tables and from these create symbolic representations that it can turn around and then draw proteins from. So, and then it presents it to you so you can modify it if you wish, so you don't have to accept it as such, but it presents to you in a form that you can either accept as is or slightly modify in order to update it or create what you want from it. And then each of these are then you know, you can look into particular details there. This other feature here is patient information. So, for example, this shows all the information that I find useful for the amyloid beta peptide. But you know, from the previous talk, all of this is weak to use. So I get for most of you. So keeping this in context, there's also a we also have internet links, so that we have information that's relevant to patients, and
CAM.
Yeah, it's second first.
You didn't know that?
I made it up, Simon.
CADD.
What is going there? What will suck you through it?
Talking for.
So you got the C. CADD. ADAR.
Zero.
Okay. So it takes you to it takes you to the website. So then this is the links that the patients are expected to know. For example, why to get tested, the test itself, and this describes what it is expected for. Some of the heading stops, so I don't even have my scroll markers. So. But it takes you to the website for how a patient or a layperson might understand. So we have links for patient information in here as well. Back off that here. And we also have, you can scroll down to references, we have a link at the top, and all of our Medline unique identifiers link to abstracts, all of our URLs, so the references, you simply click on them. And within the text too, if there's, for example, a reference here that's got a link to it, then you can simply click on that particular, and it takes you right down to that reference. Bar that takes us back to the top. You can print it or append it to a file. Let's go back here. We also have a command language that's much faster to use than the. It's an integration of science and medicine. It encompasses internal medicine, molecular pathology, biochemistry, molecular biology, pathology, laboratory medicine, radiology, pharmacology, and really anything that I need to know to the patient, things that I know to do with it. And also things that this is me in terms of research, I think, I'm interested in seeing what they it has features of college. So,
you were going to talk about the cross-platform and delivery.
Yeah. Well, the issues thus far you've seen for the cross-platform delivery are the use of images, and that there's no standardized mechanism for use of images. The internet access protocols for internet access protocols. The meta object protocol or access for meta objects, where you need to be able to go through. One of the things we do is we specialize the inheritance of slot values for different types of classes and particular proteins inherit motifs through a process of union rather than shadowing. And we need to go through and order the look at the supertypes and collect all of the various inherit slot values for the supertypes, and then combine those all in a union form. And in order to do that, we had to go back through and find out what they were. We also have protocols for sorting the supertypes so that the calls the correct methods for drawing objects, et cetera, things like that. So the issues with cross-platform development are, in fact, the other issue, major issue, is this concept of persistent objects. And it would certainly be nice to have some sort of standardized format for a display or a storage and retrieval of persistent objects. We have, as you saw, brought up databases that we use that are rather large and too large for memory. A lot of my users, I still fight this battle, my users still with 256 megabytes of RAM. Our full versions takes 512 of RAM to run. We built a version that cuts out a lot of the biochemistry that will run on 256 for students who only want the medicine part, that has medicine, pharmacology, and, for example, anatomy as well.
Are you using the CLIM that's part of MCL and LispWorks, or are you using NICLIM?
No, we use CLIM with MCL and CLIM with LispWorks. And CLIM works very well for the line drawings as you saw. Everything moves right over. I don't have to do anything to that. What is a little different is the font sizes. And I did have a list of the font. In fact, in looking at what you see here and is what it does is it picks all the English, and then it finds that it goes through and reads each line. We use a function called regex that actually does a string search and finds out where in a line something will appear. And so that we identify, and during load time, we load the whole program, it identifies where each word is and where each line is. So they're all attached to the things that find the highlights. So then it writes over those, and it usually writes over in blue, but sometimes it doesn't write over in blue. And it highlights, and it wraps up a ceiling with presentations out with it that allows you to click on it and takes you to either an object that describes that or what we call or it takes you to an image. You can vary that depending upon what you specify. But initially the questions addressed were what are the essential features of biomolecules that give rise to the individual to their function within cellular compartments and individual cells, how these features can be captured in a computer representation, and how are the features of cells give rise to interactions with other cells within the tissues, organs, and organ systems, and what are the features of diseases that are essential to understand the practice of medicine, and how are those features related to changes in the organ system, organ, tissue, cellular compartment, and molecular function. Well, that was a tall order. And still that's our goal, but then the question that hit me about 1995, 1996 or so, is how can we make this useful? And so a large part of our project, making this useful for what I do, and for teaching. And then there's the other part of really having to be able to do what we want to do and be able to do both in the same environment. Well, we've had pretty good success with this, so we can still experiment and change the way we do things, change that around, and then put it back together, and we can still deliver if it doesn't break. It's pretty remarkable. Lisp's been pretty good in that regard. And we've used the Common Lisp Interface Manager to do this. So we wanted to represent medical and biological information, present data. We've also wanted to reason with this information as well. We use CLIM and CLOS. CLIM is pretty good for us in this regard, with a few exceptions. And then there's also this issue of uncertainty, which can be qualitative or quantitative. This provides a very good way for representing qualitative uncertainty, because you can express things in terms of the general class, and then you can make assertions at a class level, and you can have these extend to all of the individual subtypes of the class. And you can do this either by proliferating individual objects, or you can do it during search through your search algorithm. Well, let's go on here. It's fast, it's focused, it's customizable. We use authoring tools. Didn't get that in. But anyway, our authoring tools are a set of high-level development tools that really don't assume any level of programming. In fact, this is what I use to put information in, per se, and what my colleagues and associates use to put information into the system. They require a level of understanding of how it is we need to structure information, but they don't require any programming skills. So what they are is, in essence, a set of templates that you use to by comparison, and you can build structures this way.
Now, are those, you added the textual representation, or do you have some kind of high-level authoring tool?
Well, it's a textual representation, and I'll show you. It's fairly crude, but it turns out that the fastest, simplest way that I've had to do this is copy and paste and do by example. You know, you can build fancy tools and so forth, but the simplest and way to do it is just to cut and paste and do by example. And then it's a portal system that has links to internet resources as well as. And we link to PubMed, KEP, PubChem, NIH Health Information, Medline Plus are two sources that are very useful for laypersons and patients. And then there's lab tests online that you saw that they found useful information for patients about lab tests. Clinical practice guidelines that has the evidence-based medicine for why we practice medicine the way we do. And several others as well. So, scope of diseases, symptoms, signs, symptoms, clinical procedures, laboratory tests.
Let's see a venomous reptile.
Your venomous reptiles, most of the snake bites in this country are pit vipers. And, you know, if you have come into your ER, you happen to be working, and this is how it is we evaluate the snake bite, for example. And you can see all the highlighting here. Let's show you, for example, in rheumatoid arthritis. Let me show you here. Okay, this is our template system for rheumatoid arthritis. We have various properties that we can give it. The user can't see the difference between slots and things that wrap around slots. For example, we use a lot of properties that we can store in hash lists or properties or our property lists or hash tables. to the developer look exactly like what the slots are. They don't have to know the difference. But they're all associated only with the class itself and not with all the objects that might be proliferating within that particular class. And this shows the highlighting for what we need to specify for all of the English comments that appear here. And it for this huge amount of highlighting, it goes pretty fast. I just took the highlighting out.
So if you enter your knowledge, do you type it into these list forms, or do you get?
No, we use these general forms. The users get used to these forms because they're easy. They can cut the previous one and paste into it. So it's running through so it tells me that it talks back. It tells me the rheumatoid arthritis already maps to, and then it tells you a bunch of things. It gives you a warning. It tells me rheumatoid arthritis already maps to rescue ambulance, room air, radiant, rheumatoid arthritis, and right atrium. So you can see that you have a lot of acronyms that can map to a lot of different things, and they can mean a lot of different things in different contexts. We have a way that we can specify default value for, say, synonym, for example. So that if it appears in some place, it will assume that default value. Otherwise, if it's not in that scenario, we'll present you, well, what did you mean by this? And the highlight, you can see it shows us all the terms that are highlighted. It did fairly fast. You just sift through these and see if you want to accept them or not. And some of the terms itself, it has to apply to the number. You don't want to specify an MG anywhere. Any MG, you want to pick up that. But you want to pick up an MG that's separated by spaces and it actually means milliliter, for example. And you can accept or reject these. So one of the fun things, you can write to it, and if you revise the text, all this highlighting will do automatically for you. And this is one of the features that because then it allows the student to point and click. So, well, what's that? Virtually anything in the English Common will give you a point and click at, and it will give you a... Okay, so let me wrap up here. And so the overall organization, the user input, and the user puts input, and then the query is translated into a form that the computer understands, and then it runs search engines and picks out things that are appropriate. And then it takes a search in and then puts them through, determines how it's going to display them. So that's presentation, translation. And then it displays that in ways that tries to enhance the conceptual understanding. We linked to Grant's Atlas of Human Anatomy. There's over 1,000 images in there that you can either point to the thing in the image or point to the word, and it will give you information about that, and also the internet-based resources. And this is just where the number of people have helped me in one way or another through here. It's been the sort of this community has been very, very helpful in terms of providing things. For example, the Gary King provided the code that we use for internet access. Alexander Refnay provided the code that we use for image display. We use like Dave Fox and ListWorks has been helpful in terms of bringing ListWorks up to where the industry now has been. And Ashwalat and Aho did most of the work that I did. Does that take any questions?
I saw that you been working on this for 17 years.
Yes.
Predates CLIM.
Right.
How much programming effort has gone into this thing in terms of not in developing the data, but in terms of making the infrastructure over the years?
Well,
various parts. How would you break it down?
Initially, I spent most of my time learning lessons. It took me a year before I could actually write in code. I trained as a physician. I saw this great thing with the AI. I went to a meeting on AI when I was a UCLA resident, and I just talked to Bob. Saw it as a huge potential. So I spent a year learning programming lessons, and a few people helped me. And then most of my time was spent programming. And then about 1992, I was spending about half of my time programming, half of my time putting the information. About 1990, after I got the CNN bugs worked out, mostly for MCL, then I began to spend most of my time putting in stuff and changing the way. But then I find, well, we need to do this, so I changed the way we did that. And so I guess I still spent the majority of my time putting in new stuff because I'm one of the major contributors. And we write a lot of stuff, manual stuff in, because we write it so that you can access it as fast as humanly possible with somebody sitting there in front of you. Because when you have a student in front of you, you don't want to fumble. You have a patient in front of you, you don't want to be fumbling through anything. You want to be able to go right to what it is that you want and be able to have your answer. If you want to know a drug dose, you want to be able to look and find out that drug dose. If you want to be able to find side effects, you want to go right to the side effects. You don't have to wade through a whole bunch of stuff, particularly the patient in front of you. You don't have to wade, through a bunch of stuff. So the answer is most of my time I spend putting in stuff. But I still spend about maybe 10 to 25% of the time trying to build new stuff, to build new features, new tools.
You look to me out of all of that field here, but have you considered moving to sort of a web-based application paradigm?
Well, yes and no. In my teaching environment, I don't always have the web. So that would put me dead in water, wouldn't it?
You don't need the web to use web-based paradigm.
What's that?
You don't need to be in a local service. You don't need the web to use web-based paradigm.
I guess I could do that. One of the difficulties I have here is that some of the stuff that I talked to Peter Karp about putting this into his web-based version or CLOS-based web version that he was working in. And there's some difficulties in the line drawings. And a lot of our stuff is based on line drawings.
You could dynamically generate them with something like CLGB.
The possibly do that, yeah. The other thing is that and this is part of the problem, is that there's somewhat limited resources. Right now, I write all of them, even though I'm paid full time as a physician. I write all of the list codes. The people that I work with, my coworkers, they don't write any code. I try to encourage them. They don't write it. I write all the code. So that's been at least part of the problem. And my resources are somewhat, when I had last week, for example, I'm going to split this up a lot. I wind up, I had this covered at the hospital because this was somebody else. So I was full time taking care of patients in the hospital and the ward. This was presented me a great opportunity to use it as a teaching tool, and I got three new users, but I didn't do much for the program.
I think your priorities are misplaced.
Well, the trouble is when you have sick patients versus program, the sick patients always come first.
So what would you estimate is the actual size of this code base that you generate?
Well, I just looked in MCL, the size of memory is 122 megabytes for this particular version. Now, I do have, and also one of the things that I do is microarray stuff that I need to show you. And that ups it quite a bit. We have huge databases that we dump off of this there. Access and that size is more like that, probably 175, 180.
One more question, then we get a quick break.
I think the question actually goes to the line of code.
Just that?
Line of code that I saw from that.
Yeah,
system file. So,
yeah. It's, this thing is distributed across huge numbers of files. I'll guess that the total code size is... we mix data with code, too, so that, that becomes a little bit problematic to some extent. So, 10 megabytes? If it's... Actually, I have it on a pocket drive. I moved all of the non-essential stuff off it. So, probably not good. But my guess is about 10 megabytes.
Well...